bridge is on hold, that, that'll be thrown back into the committee. So that takes care of that one. I would request from you, Representative Furness, you had one bill yesterday, I'd like to hold it for one more day.
Okay.
I would like to see you afterwards to make a few technical changes on that bill regarding attorneys and municipalities.
Okay.
The only bill that we have before us then is House Bill 529, an act to establish a veterans discount on state land disposals and providing an effective date. We had this bill before us and had some problems with it. This bill established a discount on the price of state land purchased by a veteran. A former statute repealed last year provided a 75% discount, or $37,500, which is less. House Bill 529 proposes a 25% discount to one-year resident veterans who serve in the armed forces for at least 90 days. A veteran may only receive one discount. The fiscal note that you have before you shows a $530,000 loss of revenue to the state due to the passage of the bill. I have prepared, along with the subcommittee, a finance CS which have been approved by the sponsors. The CS attempts to resolve a conflict between the original bill and the existing law on land offered to veterans under statute number 0.067, the veterans preference section of the statute. This section states that land can only be sold to veterans at fair market value, whereas the bill say the land be sold to veterans at 25% less. The CS resolves the conflict by inserting the word not, which is shown on the CS on page number 2, line number 1. A discount under this section may not, and the word not has been added. And that's the only change of this. Is there any questions regarding this bill? Is there anybody here that would like to testify to this particular bill? Representative
Motion?
Yes.
Chairman, I move that we pass from committee at this time. Committee substitute for House Bill number 529 Finance. The clerk will work draft is 3284. I would assume that this is a fiscal note.
March 20th, 1984.
Right. Looks like a zero fiscal note.
It's a negative fiscal note.
Right.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Committee substitute for House Bill number 529 Finance is passed out with the fiscal note dated March 20th, 1984. This completes the agenda for House Finance. House Finance is adjourned. Would the House Finance please come to order? This afternoon we'll take the bills in the following order. House Senate Bill 255, House Bill number 347, House Bill number 685, House Bill 707, and then we'll close out the Department of Health, Education, and Social Services budget at the end of the day. The first bill you have before you is Senate Bill 255. This particular bill is by Senator Katula. I have before you a House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 255 Finance. The technical changes that I told you I'd make yesterday, you may recall that the first time we heard this bill early in session, I had a Finance CS drafted. That CS only changed the Senate bill by stating the types of offenses that municipalities would be responsible for would be serious crimes instead of those that go to jury trial. Serious crimes is a broader term and include those times that expense to defend even though they don't get a jury trial. Defense of indigents who commit all serious crimes are properly the responsibility of the municipality. The earlier drafted CS can be found in Section 3 of the draft CS you have before you. The additional language in the CS before you today is the response to comments of the Juneau City Attorney and others who testified at the earlier meeting. Mostly the additional language is technical. Sections 1 and 2 make adjustments to those statutes to make it clear that the municipal pick up the cost for defense of indigent charges with municipal crimes. Subsections A and B of Section 3, which I have already explained, subsection C allows the court to make the defendant pay back the municipal for his defense if so desired. Here to testify on this bill is Dana Fabe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
I testified earlier on this bill, and as you correctly stated, this bill was sent to a subcommittee of this committee, particularly due to the technical omission in the first bill. Right now, in the state statute, if persons can pay partial costs of their defender costs, they are ordered to pay back the court for those costs, and that goes into the state general fund. And of course, if the municipality were going to pay for its own defender services, one of the defendants could pay partial costs in one of those municipal cases, then of course he would be paying back the municipality, and that was the chief change. Again, I would urge this committee, I would just like to state my support of this bill due to the fact that in my Anchorage office particularly, the number of municipally prosecuted cases continues to rise. These cases are really beginning to eat up attorneys who have been specifically funded by this legislature to handle mental health commitments, to handle appellate work, to handle other felony work, and I'm having to draft them into service to handle municipally prosecuted misdemeanors because this caseload just hit. Last year alone in Anchorage, we had close to 2,300 of these cases. And again, I know I've testified before this committee in the past on the bill, and I don't want to take up your time. I'm certainly available to answer any questions.
Representative Markham?
Thank you, Chairman. So, in conclusion, with the substitute here is that Municipal Anchorage will still be responsible for paying for its own defendants, but they can charge the defendant.
That's correct.
So that's, okay.
And Criminal Rule 39, which is an Alaska Supreme Court rule, sets up a procedure by which any time during the case or after the case, if the person is determined to be able to pay some portion of his costs, and there can be a hearing where his finances are examined, the court can rule that he has to pay back partial or full cost of his defense at the $40 an hour rate, which is what conflict attorneys get by the court. And we do keep time records on these cases so that we submit to the court how much time we've spent on the case, and they go ahead and bill the client. And in these municipal cases, and rather than that money going back to the state general fund as it does now in state cases, it would go to the municipality.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
Further questions?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anybody that would like to testify on Senate Bill 255? Representative Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to motion that House Committee Substitute Committee Substitute Senate Bill 255 Finance passed out of committee with individual recommendation and the fiscal note of February 684.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The next bill is House Bill number 347. This bill is an act related to the license of neuropaths and providing for an effective date. The sponsor is by Representative Martin and Representative Tissue. This bill would establish a procedure for licensing and regulating neuropaths in Alaska. Exactly what neuropaths should be allowed to do is the subject of a great deal of debate. Therefore, I would like Representative Martin to explain this particular bill, and probably Representative Fritz also. Representative Martin.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Which bill are we having before us?
House Bill number 347.
Okay, there are a number of versions that I have here.
The last one was Labor and Commerce.
Yes, the Labor and Commerce one.
Okay, I have three that say Labor and Commerce.
Right, if you hold up.
And there's one that has the markup. Is that the...
Yes, it is. And I think Representative Martin will also address that in his comments, Representative Zero.
This was an easy bill at the beginning, Mr. Chairman, and is highly supported by a cohort from Kenai. But as you can see, I'd like to bring to members' attention this rather lengthy sheet that shows the differences between all four versions. And there you can see the mass confusion that ensued thereof. Mr. Chairman, rather than go over this, and take the committee's time, I think it'd be most prudent to consider a subcommittee for considerations of the various alternatives section by section, because I just think we'd probably end up with 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours, if not 10, 20 more days at the full committee, and I thought it would just be more prudent to have a subcommittee.
Thank you. Representative Fritz, there's a suggestion by Representative Martin that this particular bill go into subcommittee. It would be my pleasure to appoint Representative Martin, yourself, and Representative Zaroff to this subcommittee.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
Mr. Chairman. Dr. Zaroff?
I mean, you'll write the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would certainly enjoy serving on this committee, but as you remember, I am excused for approximately the next week, and I'm not sure if the subcommittee is going to meet during that period of time, then I would certainly request that I relinquish my seat to
Well, Mr. Chairman, your request is granted, Representative Zaroff, due to your absence.
Okay, House Bill number
Mr. Duncan's on it.
347 is sent to subcommittee. Next bill is House Bill number 685.
You don't want it, I'll take it.
Hey, I'm always with.
This is an act relating to the Alaska Resource Corporation and repealing the Alaska Renewable Resource Development Fund and the Alaska Resource Investment Fund and providing for an effective date. This bill would wind down the investment activity of the Alaska Resource Corporations over the next 5 years. Most incoming and existing funds would be transferred from the ARC Development Fund to the General Fund. This means that approximately $10 million would go into the General Fund when the bill passes. Only $500,000 would remain in the ARC Development Fund to take care of the contingency liabilities. There is a $500,000 fiscal note from revenue. These funds would be used to staff, office support, legal fees, and other costs associated with managing the investments in the next year. Here to testify on the bill is Norm Staten, with the assistance of the Commissioner on Department of Revenue. Is also, as Terry Elder would like to be up with you at this time.
Mr. Chairman, Norm Staten and I have coordinated questions.
Very good. Okay. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Norman Staten. I'm a special assistant to Commissioner Heath from Revenue. Also should be noted in the audience is Perry Eaton, one of the directors of Alaska Resource Corporation. Under the bill, it would... The governor has decided that it would be best to change the Alaska Resource Corporation, recognizing it had provided a worth for a period of time. However, there's been serious concerns over it and its investments, and the governor felt that it was the proper time to wind it down. Unfortunately, in order to do the wind down, due to the equity and debts that the corporation has incurred or has entered into, it will take a number of years to do that. The first phase of it would be to, and the investments have been pretty much stopped for the past 6 months. All the money that they have liquid, which is approximately $10 to $12 million, will come back to the general fund immediately. Then the existing amount of money, which is the equity debt loans they have out, approximately $24 million, would be slowly wound down with the money coming into the general fund. It would change the composition of the board of directors from public members. There is five now, with three being public and three or four being public and one being three or four being private people and one being a commissioner. Would make all three of them commissioners. There has been some discussion earlier committee hearings as to whether or not you would want any private person on the committee or on the as a director. However, it would probably, and the recommendation is and had been accepted by earlier committees, that it would be best to leave it with three commissioners. And this is due to the fact that this is basically going to be in the wind down, selling off a lot of pieces of property and equipment, which will depend quite a bit on staff time and on things like that, which commissioners are better to delegate to. Is there any questions? Excuse me. If I may back up for 1 second, there is a number of places in the bill itself, if you're reading through, may tend to confuse you, because part of the bill is also a cleanup with regard to the Resource Development Fund, Alaska Renewable Resource Development Fund, in which the computer went through through legislative affairs and picked out everywhere that was cited in the statutes and then deletes it. So there are quite a number of portions of the bill that relate to just the deletion of reference to the Alaska Renewable Resource Development Fund. Any questions?
Representative Lindauer.
Yeah. Just for my own background as to where we're at, has the legislature in fact eliminated the Renewable Resource Corporation, or is this being done by executive order?
No, this would eliminate it with a wind down period of time.
So this is the legislation.
This is the legislation.
Eliminates this.
Correct.
If we didn't pass this legislation and the administration did not particularly engage in executive orders to fill it, it would just slowly wind down. Is that correct?
No, it wouldn't wind down. The money would stay in it. And that's what the purpose of this is that $10 to $12 million will immediately be sent back to you in the legislature. Otherwise, the money would stay there. There would be no mandate for the money to come back to
us. How is the money now being managed?
The $10 to $12 million is in various investments, time CDs, and things like that, which is
outside
pretty much liquid.
Outside of Alaska, I would wager.
They're in Alaska banks. There are in Alaska banks.
Oh my God, that's a unique occasion.
All of it is.
Representative Furness.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure that we're looking at the same bill document. I have one dated 2/13/84. Looks to be the original bill.
I don't believe that's the original one. I think in the loans committee, if you recollect, there was a change as of 3/27/84 that pertained more to the provisions with regard to Alaska Resource Development Fund, Renewable Resource Development Fund. Mr. Representative Furness, I think we had a discussion in the loans committee, if you recollect, back then as to why those other sections, whether or not they were pertinent to be listed.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask we hold this one day.
Representative Furness, your reasons?
Well, he's right. There was, let's see it here. There was some cleanup language that was done in one of the bills.
Yes, the difference between the bill, the original bill, House Bill number 685, that was introduced on 2/13/84 to the committee substitute for House Bill under loans, your changes that they made with the added new sections on page number 3, lines 22, sections 11, 12, 14 on page number 4, made minor changes on page number 5 in different sections, and line number 26 under sections also was the other ones. But the main body of changes that we made, Representative Furness, as I said, 11, 12, 14 was the main changes. Were added language.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, again, those were just the technical amendments that Legislative Affairs brought to the attention after finding it in the computer.
Mr. Chairman, I still would request that we hold this. Something that I think we need to check.
Representative Lindauer?
Yeah. Based on the, I'm looking at the fiscal note here. First, investment site inspections. These are the sites of the previous investments that were made. The board is not making investments at this time, is that correct?
Correct.
Other than passive investments through CDs?
What has happened is we have a number of investments that we had to foreclose on. We have a facility, Gibson Cove facility in Kodiak, which is maybe as much as worth as $7 million. We have plants down in Cape, in Hoonah we have barges. Petersburg, we are on the board of directors of Icicle Seafoods. We are on the board of directors of Salmantoff Seafoods. as a result of our previous investments, we have a considerable amount of obligations to go and check up on what is going on within those corporations, as well as actual physical assets that we have to go and maintain and to check out.
Who will take over the roles on these companies when you
Well, what the intent of it is over the five-year period of time is to work to the best efforts to restructure those equity positions and to cash them out.
So you're going to be, in effect, taking offers on your various assets?
Correct.
And phasing out, are you going to go through any kind of normal procedure of publication? Will these be negotiated sales? Will these be public sales? How do you plan to liquidate your position?
It hasn't been fully arrived at yet. The board has pretty much transferred a lot of the responsibility for that to the Department of Revenue, which the Division of Treasury will supervise, and most of that would probably have to be negotiated sales as opposed to public sales.
If we don't pass this legislation, what is the effect if this legislation does not pass?
The effect is ARC would continue to operate, and then they, depending upon the decisions of the board of directors, and right now there's three board of directors, and the governor would have to reappoint the full board. It's my understanding that two of the present board are considering resigning in the near future. They could either start making investments again or just not do anything.
They would be really operate under the direction of the governor in the sense, is that realistic? If you wanted them not to make investments but be passive, they would tend to stay passive.
Except right. They have been passive for approximately the last 6 to 8 months, other than one loan. That was the Schnabel Mill in Haines, and that was to protect the previous investment.
Thank you.
Representative Martin?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Somebody, question that Mr. Lindau asked was, same concern I have, but it looks like to me we're asking for a five-year wind down.
Correct.
And we're asking $500,000 a year to wind down.
No, this is the first year of Department of Revenue officially going to be helping supervise. The bill was provided to the chairman of the board to be the commissioner of revenue. We hope to be able to lessen that amount. I feel pretty confident that we'll be able to lessen that amount considerably. It's just that we don't have a full understanding of what we're getting involved into until this year, until we get in and grab a hold of it and look at all the assets and see exactly what we have.
Mr. Chairman, for me, I'm wondering what the board was doing all this time. If you don't know, it's the same people involved?
No, the board, there is a board now, but there will be there will be three commissioners.
Might have been changed here to three new people.
Correct.
The Commerce, the Revenue Man, and so on. It won't take them 5 years to find out. In other words, I really feel, to be honest with you, is that we're saving 1, 2, 3, 4 positions for 5 years.
That won't be in solid for 5 years, sir. It will probably be changed next year when we bring their budget back to you, and I would venture to say it will be considerable less than $500,000 next year, because next year we will have sold off as much of the assets as we possibly can. We'll require less employees to maintain the corporation and protect the assets.
Could this not just be transferred to the Commissioner of Revenue's office instead of doing heavy investments anyway, and they just take this over as a small little packet?
This bill does not, there will be no longer any investments. This will be selling off the assets. And the importance,
couldn't he do that?
The importance of leaving it in a corporate shell method is to protect the state from liability. We have a number of pieces of property out there, and we're involved in a number of lawsuits presently. We would rather have a corporation shell, such as Alaska Resource Corporation, having that liability as opposed to having the Department of Revenue State of Alaska as a defendant or a plaintiff.
Thank you. I am going to hold this bill over for at least for the weekend to give you a chance to look at it, Representative.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I may ask that maybe refer to a subcommittee of three persons with a report back to the committee by Wednesday of next week.
That's fine.
Okay.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, I have it.
Just to get a little back, if I ask a couple more questions.
Sure.
The current directors, are these the same directors who were on the startup phase, or have there been changes? Or
no,
what's
sir,
the composition of the current board?
The composition of the board is Clark Greening, Perry Eaton, who is in the crowd here, and Commissioner of Commerce, and the Deputy Commissioner Terry Elder has normally taken their spot. There is presently two openings available on the board. When the corporation initially was started, some of the members of the committee were in the legislature at that time. There was completely a different set of people. It was Bill Spear, Phil Hubbard, and maybe Dean Olson. And they
none of the existing directors are part of the original startup group.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Before I put this into a subcommittee, is there anybody else that would like to testify on it? The subcommittee is chaired by Representative Grusendorf, Furness, and Representative Duncan.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Before you, could we ask Mr. Eaton to come forward just for a second as a director of the company?
Mr. Eaton, would you be kind enough to come up here and answer a couple questions, please?
Sorry about that.
Would you state your name for the record?
Perry Eaton.
I'm chairman of the board of Alaska Resource Corporation.
Representative Lindauer.
Mr. Eaton.
Your opinion, you've had background in these areas, what would be the impact? Would it be adverse or positive or neutral? An impact if the legislature did nothing at this time, in fact, allowed the current operation to continue as it is in a more passive role, as I understand it has been for the last 7 or 8 months, what would be the impact of maintaining its current structure and continuing to behave passively?
While it appears to be a very simple question, it's very significant. It's a complex question. The problem with the corporation is, in Governor Hammond's waning days, he appointed a new board of directors. We found a corporation in significant chaos, poorly managed, with a atrocious, and perhaps I'm being kind, a portfolio. We found very few of the investments that had actually achieved anywhere near what the expectations were on anybody's part. We found no constituency, literally no constituency. We put out feelers, we made public statements, we got no complaints, we got no response at all. The impact is that I believe that you will be wasting a resource in the form of the liquidity of the company that can be better served in other areas of the state right now, and you'll actually be perpetuating something that is represented other than in fact it is, that being a functional corporation.
Well, one last question. The reason that I asked that you come up had to do because of the mention of the Schnabel lumber mill, that in fact there had been a form of activity. Is there anything in place now, if this body, if your organization goes by the boards, will there be anything in place to handle the next emergency or the next opportunity or the next need to protect the collateral? How are we a year from now going to protect our collateral, handle an emergency if there's another mill closure, or who knows what the next emergency will be that requires a legitimate body and being to make the appropriate investments? Where do we go when you're gone?
I'm not sure I'm competent to answer that. You won't be able to come back to the Resource Corporation. You won't be able to bail out, so to speak, existing credits within the company by additional appropriations or additional loans from the company. You'll have to turn to the private sector in a normal business manner, and if in fact the thing is financeable, I would assume that those funds would be available. You would have no place to turn to, but my experience with the current portfolio is that we have no credits that I'm aware of that would warrant additional investment at this point in time. We're in a wind-down phase on the Gibson Cove facility. I believe that we have a good opportunity to utilize that and sell it and get it back into the mainstream. And the rest of the credits are relatively small. The budget of $500,000, I point out, is primarily due to the litigation involved right now. We're deeply involved in the Ball Brothers bankruptcy in Bristol Bay. We've gotten just numerous bankruptcies and failures, and the cost of pursuing those in the interest of the state is quite substantial.
Could they not be settled out enough? Could you go to binding arbitration or something on these?
We are doing everything within our ability.
I guess my concern, Mr. Chairman, is if we get rid of this body, we don't know yet that there may be a mine, a barge line, there may be a crucial element that requires a mechanism to channel money into it. And I'm just concerned that we don't have another mechanism, and I'm not so sure we should save this corporation. I don't know enough, but I think we need a mechanism. I know from my own experience that rural Alaska has trouble getting financing. It is very difficult to get a banker, and with all due respect to all the bankers, they can't see it from their towers in Anchorage. They quite often won't lend for it, and many of the so-called branch banks are in fact branch depositories. It is very difficult in rural Alaska for a barge line or a cannery or whatever to get financing. And I'm just concerned we have no place to go.
The track record of this company in those particular areas is terrible. It has not been effective.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Eaton. This bill has gone into a subcommittee. We will be hearing it back next Wednesday. One more bill that was before us, and I was waiting for Representative Bettesworth, is House Bill number 707. This bill was at the request of Budget and Audit. It prohibits the use of lobbying with earnings made for state-funded grants to communities. With the concurrence of Budget and Audit, I have prepared a CS that prohibits lobbying with grant funds as well as earnings on those funds. Also, the CS prohibits the lobbyists from serving on a state or municipal board, commission, or other public body if the employer of the lobbyist would be economically affected by the decision. And I think Representative Zaroff, you had a problem there. Did you discuss this with Representative Bettesworth?
No, I didn't.
Do you have any problems?
Yes.
Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Since I sit on the Budget and Audit Committee, this was done at the request of the committee, and then also from the finding of the Budget and Audit Committees in the years past, and a complaint from a number of legislators as to how grant monies were being used, and a lot of criticism. So basically, we are following the recommendation of the Budget and Audit investigative team.
Chair is ready for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to motion that we pass out of committee, committee substitute House Bill 707 Finance.
Zero fiscal note.
With the zero fiscal note.
Any objections? So ordered. The last thing we've got this afternoon is the closing out of the HES budget. Before then, I would like to give you this week's and next week's assignments, that there will be no finance tomorrow. On Monday, we will close out the legislature's budget. Wednesday, I plan to take up House Bill number 511. I would like any members here that would like to take up a specific item to put that in writing to me, and the people that you would like to hear testify on that. Representative Duncan, such as I think under Commerce APA or somebody. Before I get any further, on Monday, it's my plan to take up the longevity bonus at 1:30 with utilizing a Senate bill, a compromise that is in the making at this time. There will be no finance next Thursday or Friday, as Friday is Good Friday. Effective April 24th, which is the following Tuesday, we will start finance at 8 a.m. in the morning. Go on till 9:30. If we need be, we'll come back at night. It's our plan to, I think, have session from 10 to 12 and 1 to whatever time. At this time, we'll take a 5-minute break and set up for HES. Come to order. This is the second to the last budget we're going to close out. It's Department of Health and Social Services. A very liberal budget that we're going to present this afternoon to you.
beyond the amount of money that I've set aside for health education services. I would at this time like to go through the budget and then ask that that after each of the budget components that you would be able to ask questions on it. And there are, I think, about five different amendments that I am going to take up and accept, and then we can close this out. The committee that worked on this is Representative Clarkson, Representative Tischer, and myself. We've spent a number of hours on many subjects in here. And I think that the budget that we have today is a very good budget. There will be some issues that are debated, but I think for the services and benefits for all Alaskans, I think it's a good budget. At this time, I also have Representative Clarkson here with me that would make some opening remarks.
Well, I also agree that it's a fairly sound budget. We found a number of areas where cuts could be made, and with the money that's been identified because of those cuts, there have been places where priority has been shifted and there have been add-ons. As a general principle, I think you will find cuts in areas that do not provide direct services and add-ons in areas that do provide direct services. With that, I suppose we ought to just go through it.
Okay. The first area we're going to cover is the social services, the assistance payments, starting with page number 2, AFDC, the houses number. We reduced the caseload. The estimate was from 5,531. We reduced it to an estimate of 5,429. And so that's the reduction there. We do have on the back page intent language. The intent language says if funding for program is insufficient to meet demands, service and eligibilities are not to be reduced or eliminated, and the department is to request supplemental funding. Okay. Is there any questions? Going on to page number 4 on the general relief, we took the governor's amended numbers as there. Page number 6, adult public assistance. We reduced the caseload estimate from 4,865 to 4,776. Again, behind, we put the intent language in there to request a supplement funding if the estimate is off. Okay, that completed the assistant payments. The next one we have is the permanent fund dividend hold harmless. As you can see on page number 10, we reduced the caseload estimates. The exact amount of the FY dividend checks has not been determined. We estimate them to be approximately $350 per person. Yeah, that's general funds, yeah. We transferred, it was back under the program receipts. We did transfer that up to general funds, and that was the difference there. Continuing on with the energy assistance program, under page number 14, we took the governor's amended number. Continuing on under medical assistance, starting with Medicaid on page number 18, the reduction assumes cost of providing services will not increase more than 7%, and there will be no sufficient increase in caseload. The Medical Rate Commission will be operating for the first time and is expected that the commission will be successful in keeping costs down. If not, we ask for a supplement next year. As you can see behind, we do have intent language on page number 19.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would just like to ask on that, and I'd like to get the department's feeling on this. One, first of all, how did you come up with the 7%
figure?
If I can answer, the range in the detail book, the department indicates that the range of increase would be from 7 to 9%. They figured theirs on 9, we figured ours on 7.
Can I get, I understand the intent here that we can ask, or they can ask for supplemental. I was just wondering if I could get the department to respond perhaps to this level of funding, if they don't mind.
Yes.
Would somebody from the department, John?
Mr. John Pugh, for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The department over the years has had two mix of how you determine the cost of doing business in the medical arena. One is on the basic cost of living that increases for purchase of medical services. The second is increase in caseload. Our figures are predicting a certain increase in caseload as well as a certain cost of living. In the medical arena, we have seen in the past year a lot higher increase of what you would consider to be a cost of living factor than in any other type of service. The committee feels that the Medicaid Rate Commission can hold that down. The department is submitting its funds itself at the 9.6% is actually what our average is, was a realistic figure in the sense of the Rate Commission holding it down. I think, again, that's a crystal ball. If that's the legislature's will, we certainly will try to work
with that. May I just ask Mr. Pugh one other question? Do you see, looking at the intent there, understanding legislative intent, do you see any serious problems with this level of funding? I mean, the intent does say that you can come back in, pre-file supplemental bill, et cetera, if you need additional money. Do you think you have a serious problem here?
Well, I think that we'll be able to tell. One of the things that we have about a six-month lag in getting knowledge about the medical payment system catching up with the caseload. But what we will have is our complete numbers for FY 84 by the time the legislature comes into session. So we should be able at least to show from what we have experienced in 84 whether the projections of the legislature are the ones that we have predicted in the budget are more accurate. So I think we will have numbers to be able to
Well, I can't. That's fine.
Continue on with page number 20, catastrophic illness. We here took the governor's amended number. Going on with general relief, upon consideration, we have decided to restore $200,000 for the cost of drugs. We do have a problem. I'm going to hold that one and go with the houses number. We have some debate on this particular subject, and we're going to hold with the houses number. Representative Clarkson?
That's the number I support, Mr. Chairman. The issue here is that under the General Relief Medical Program, pharmacies are being reimbursed for 100% of pharmaceuticals. They are reimbursed at a much lower level for the Medicaid program. The proposal here is to incorporate the same sort of formulary or percentage reimbursement in the General Relief Medical Program as is currently available in that program for doctors and dentists. That is, basically the pharmacists are getting a better deal than the doctors and dentists in this program. The open issue here is that I think we are not attempting to add pharmaceuticals into the Medicaid program, which of course would trigger 50% reduction, 50% federal share. I would like to see that done, but that requires a statutory change. So the proposal is to implement a partial reimbursement in the General Relief Medical Program, and that's the intent language that you see.
Mr. Chairman, let me be sure I understand this. Instead of getting 100% reimbursement, pharmacists will get 75%.
They'll get, if I may, they'll get something less than 100, and that is left to the regulations of the department.
Who makes up the difference?
Either the pharmacist or the individual.
So it could be that people who are under General Relief Medical will now have to pick up an added cost they didn't have before for
maybe we can ask the department whether that's pharmacists. True with regard to doctors and dentists.
Mr. Pugh?
Again, there's probably two scenarios that will happen. Actually, I guess three scenarios. In some instances, pharmacies themselves will write off the cost, you know, the additional monies that they are not collecting. In some instances, they will charge the client for the additional costs under the General Relief Medical Program. And in the third instance, and which is more often what happens in medical, in the medical area, is they will cost shift. What they will do is raise their prices to other people. And that's what happens so often in the hospitals or doctor's office or whatever else. When there's a shift in one kind of reimbursement, then you up the prices in other areas. So there's three possible scenarios, and we really won't know what the end point of that is until after we make our changes.
If I can just say, the issue in my mind is one of equity, whether the pharmacists are going to get treated the same as the doctors and the dentists.
No, I understand that. I guess I understand that issue. Of course, we are adding in, by doing this, Mr. Chairman, by doing this, it appears that we're either adding in, either the pharmacists give up charging, which doesn't bother me necessarily, if they're going to write that off, or they charge people on GR Med or iPay an increased amount to make up that difference. Let me ask one other question. Of the adjusted base amount of $10,259,000, where are you at as far as an expenditure goes to date? Are you going to be
any further questions? Continuing on, under Public Assistance Administration, the first one is the quality control under page number 26. There we took the governor's amended number. Staff development under page number 28. Under travel, we reduced to FY 85 level, taken out 11,700. Contractual, we reduced to FY 84 number plus 4%, taken out 900. Going on to eligibility determination. Here we added two eligible workers and one clerk in Bethel. We reduced the travel to FY 84. We added new position costs under contractual of $18,500 for fee agents to allow them to take all types of public assistance applications. Under commodity sections, we reduced to FY 84 plus 4% and added 900 for new positions. Under equipment, we allow only equipment for new positions. Going on to Medicare Advisory Committee, under page number 32, we took the governor's amended number there.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I had three questions, so I might as well ask them now for me.
Yes, you may.
Because that was the most important one. It seemed like in this whole category, from my knowledge or lack of knowledge, that there's contradictions. Number one, in the Medicare Advisory Group, notice that 50% of that is travel, and 50% is probably matching for contractual. What exactly are we doing there? Who's advising who, and is it... to me, it really doesn't matter that it's half-fed money. It's a matter of, is there any advantage to the citizens?
Representative Clarkson?
Most of it's travel because it's a voluntary board. It's not... composed entirely of state employees, but volunteers who serve as an advisory board. Therefore, the only reimbursement is for the cost of their travel and expenses. My judgment that it's valuable as an advisor to the department.
No, we have health service committees and groups all over the place, and we diminished them in the past because they were more cost to the administration of services than they were. It seemed like basically they were justifying themselves.
I just think
in this case here,
question of, excuse me.
In this case here, I'm wondering who they are, what kind of a committee it is, and it just seems like an awful lot of money for travel.
It really is a question, I think, of citizen involvement. I think that it's important for the department to get a reality check every once in a while from people who work in the industries and are the consumers of the service they provide. It's also required by federal law.
Only because we accept the money, Mr. Chairman. It's insane. You know, we get all kinds of advice through representatives, through other people and all, and I just take it as another committee that's flying around. I don't know what they add or subtract to the whole thing. Who is the committee?
The Medical Care Advisory Committee is required by the Healthcare Financing Corporation, a federal corporation that funds all of Medicaid, medical assistance program. And this committee is composed of 5 consumers and 6 professionals. On the committee, outside of the consumers, we have a representative of the Medical Association, a representative of the Dental Association, a representative of the Nurses Association, and a couple of the other professional associations. As I mentioned, this is required. They meet approximately 3 to 4 times a year. They are required to look at any new regulation changes that we are going to make, review those, make recommendations to the departments on the impact of those. A good example of that is most recently, Representative Fox has indicated that dentists were not paid 100%. Actually, dentists have been paid 100% over the last 2 to 3 years out of the Medicaid program. We are presently in process of changing those regulations and going to a percentile basis, which the physicians have been paid for a number of years and the dentists will be paid. That regulation went to the committee for recommendations. That committee then did support the regulation change. And then, of course, the department has gone forward with public hearings and so on. I think they do serve a role of being, giving us a pulse of where the provider community is as well as some of the consumer community in terms of medical care and where the department should
go. Mr. Chairman, if I may ask on that, how does this differ then from the Southeast to South Central and the North and health service organizations that also heavily funded and supposedly given advice?
Mr. Chairman, may I respond? The health services area, Representative Martin, are largely involved in planning and special projects called upon to assist in evaluation, analysis, and what have you, by the department. As you recall, fiscal 82, they received 100,000, 83, 50,000, but 84, nothing. We did get into critical, in fact, I did personally, reevaluation of the HSAs, and they do have a very solid one.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I may continue, I guess we'll let it go, I'm not sold on it, but okay. On the quality control and the staff development, it seems to me in 1978 or 79 this was put in because of the confusion of change of federal laws and so on. And that was a new entity at that time. And I can conceive where, you always have new staff and new turnover. But to carry this on as a continuous thing, I question its need. Every department has turnover of personnel, and you're always upgrading your personnel and so on. But I haven't seen it as a specific line item. There's one in this case here. What's the value of it?
I think that the staff development area, particularly given the situation with public assistance, is very critical because every year the federal government, particularly in recent years, has made major changes in the public assistance programs, aid to families with dependent children, the food stamp program, the regulation changes, legal law changes, as well as regulation changes, almost on a quarterly basis. Every one of those changes actually has an impact on the eligibility determination system, and individuals are constantly having to be trained. I would indicate that from a department standpoint, the eligibility determination workers are probably one of the most technical jobs there is in the department in terms of a knowledge base that cannot be learned in school, cannot be taught from the private sector. It's an area of expertise that you have to learn from individuals who have had experience in that and who are keeping up on the constant changes in the federal government. And so the staff development in this area does have, in Anchorage, a training center in which we put individuals through a 2 to 3 week orientation period where they learn all the federal programs. The second piece of that is we have gone into an eligibility information system statewide, completely computerized system where each and every eligibility determination worker has a terminal on their desk and they actually input all information on an individual right directly into the mainframe of the computer. That has created a whole new environment of learning for individuals. And that, again, it has been real incumbent on us to have a centralized training place where we can train people on how to utilize the computer and how to, you know, to input and so on. So I think that it does continue to serve a function that's very important. The other issue in here is that there is some travel. There was about 38,000 that was added in by the governor, 38.5 for fee agent training. We still are the only state in the United States that is allowed to utilize basically private individuals, which we call fee agents, who we pay to take applications because of the very complicated situation in Alaska for rural communities that you cannot reach by transportation or road transportation and have face-to-face interviews. And that has continued to be a very difficult area, an area that we need to continue to train in and to be able to keep those individuals up to par.
Thank you.
Continuing on, we just finished with page number 32. We're to page number 34. Certification has been licensed on the travel. We reduced to FY84 authorized on the contractual, reduced to FY84 and plus 4%, and added $40,000 in federal funds for contract position to inspect facilities. On the page number 36, on the personal services, we increased the vacancy factor to 2%. Under travel, we reduced to FY84 authorized. Going on to page number 40, under rate commission medical, here we took the governor's amended number.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
To me. A couple of years ago, it was supposed to have been a one-year item when we were trying to upgrade our code revisions or prices charged for medical services. And I remember Dr. Hall, I believe it was, from Washington, sent up the three books they had and said more or less all we had to do is copy them for Alaska and put on the prorated cost. It looks like this is continued. Is this what this is to the commissioner, to John? We're working up the code revision and services, price for services and stuff like that?
That's correct. The Rate Commission is an ongoing commission which consists of five members. It has an executive director and three basic positions, two budget analysts and one auditor, and as well as one clerical position. But that commission is responsible in all public medical assistance programs, Medicaid, GR Med, basically the hospital and nursing homes, the large segments there, are setting the rates for those hospitals and nursing homes. They will submit budget packages to the Rate Commission. The Rate Commission, through their staff and then the actual voluntary members, will look at those budgets and project then a given rate, and will come out with rates for all the hospitals and nursing homes in the state. And that was intended in the bill to be an ongoing Rate Commission established rates every single year, because there are varying budgets in hospitals. They add services, they subtract services, so on. Those are going to be looked at every single year and established.
What is my understanding? It sounds like it's going to be ongoing, but that it was supposed to be a one-shot deal. Do we have a publication now available, like other states have? California has it. Any state has what charges are for various procedures or services. Is that anticipated to have that someday, some year?
Well, this commission at this point in time is only looking at hospitals and nursing homes, and there will be established rates for each individual hospital and nursing home. There will not be charged, statewide charges, particularly given the situation in Alaska, the geographical situations. Each hospital will be dealt with individually and not as a whole. In other words, we won't have a single rate statewide adjusted.
Of course not.
That was not the intent of the legislation.
Commissioner?
I think the main point here of Senate Martin was, instead of after the fact settlement with all the trauma associated with it, the commission will be setting rates before that.
This is what it was hoped to be, yeah.
Continue on to page number 44 under purchase services. The House has broken this BRU down into four new components to show a greater budget detail under the governor's administration. They put it all under one under page number 52 under purchase of services, but we separated out, starting with page number 44 under homemaker services. What we've done here is taken the number we reduce to FY84 authorized plus 4% and transfer funds to the Nome area to the new Norton Sound Health BRU under homemaker services. The next one is under page number 46, daycare. We reduce to FY84 number plus 4% increase. Under preventive services, page number 48, we are here reduced to FY84 plus 4%. We deleted a one-time grant to FY84 for Fairbanks for Child Sexual Abuse Task Force. We added Anchorage Partners Program for Youth Delinquency, and also in addition, a Juno Big Brothers and Sisters was funded in FY84 and again in FY85. Going on to page number 50, we reduced to FY84 plus 4%. We added $150,000 for homemaker services for the handicap. We transferred from here $155,000 to Northeast Sound BRU. Under purchase services, you know, we deleted all the funding. We separated into four previous BRUs. Okay. Going on to social services, starting with direct services, delivery services. We will be later putting an amendment here, adding up social workers in Fairbanks, Wasilla, Naknek, and Kodiak. Here we had 18 positions and associated costs that transferred in from purchase of services. We transferred the foster care coordinator to foster care component, increased vacancy factor to 2%. Deleted one-time fiscal note funding for FY84 and deleted the equipment. Under page number 58, under work incentive, we have accepted the governor's amended number, except that authorization for two vacant unfunded positions is deleted. Page number 60, juvenile custody. We transferred to this BRU to foster care and institutional care to show greater budget detail again. Here under foster care, page number 62, the foster care coordinator position is transferred in from direct services. We added three positions each in Fairbanks and Anchorage for foster care program coordination, increased training and support services by $38,300 for a total new number of $330,300. Continuing on to page number 64 under institutional care, we deleted an FY84 add-on for Bethel and Sitka. Those are one-time grants. We transferred $135,300 to foster care, and this budget assumes passage of Senate Bill 431, which will allow the department to contract to youth residential services on a cost-per-bed basis.
Chairman?
Yes?
What happens with the lack of that passage?
Go ahead, Elmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that in the absence of passage of that bill, the actual cost of this program would increase by approximately $2 million.
Would that come in as a supplemental request, or?
Mr. Chairman, in the event that this budget passes and the bill did not, I assume they would be in a supplemental situation for next year.
Would there be adequate funds there to operate during the interim?
Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the department on that.
Yes, there will be enough funds. The question would be whether we take action to reduce the number of beds that we would purchase given the situation, and we would have to work in the executive branch to determine whether we could overspend or whether we would have to go ahead and make the early reduction. We're very hopeful the bill will pass. It's a top priority in the department. It's certainly been a priority with the executive branch, and it's in the Senate Finance right now. I have not heard any opposition. It's a matter of getting it moving.
Mr. Chairman, would the subcommittee consider possibly a letter of intent for this section here, hinging on the possible non-passage of that Senate bill? Those services would not be reduced. Or...
We have no problem with that. Representative Zaroff, when we come to amendments.
Okay, how about possibly when we have the bill back before us with the entire package?
Fine. Going on to page number 68, the Social Services Block Grant Offset. Have the governor's amended number there. Going on to page number 72 under Youth Services. We've got the McLaughlin Youth Center. We allow the FY84 plus 4% for commodities and grants. We added one new youth counselor position and associated costs. We allow for purchase of 6 microscopes under the equipment section. Page number 74, under Fairbanks Youth Facility, we increased the vacancy factor to 2%, allowed the FY84 authorized plus 4% for commodities and grants. Under Nome Youth Facility, allowed the FY84 authorized plus 4% for commodities and grants. Page number 78 under Youth Services, Probation and Administration. We added program service aid and associated costs in Alaska, added $25,000 for transportation of youth from Ketchikan to Juneau. We deleted the FY84 add-on for Ketchikan Youth Alternative Program. We allow FY84 authorized plus 4% for commodities. Page number 80 under Youth Services, all funds have been transferred to the previous 4 components that we just got over. Page number 84, this is under Manelik, the eligibility determinant and staff development. We took the governor's amended number. Under page number 86 under Social Services, reduced to FY84 plus 4%. Public Health Services, the governor's amended number. Page number 90, under Alcohol and Drug Abuse Services, we transferred in funds from the Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Component for Alcohol Safety Action Program and Youth Drug Abuse Program here. Under page number 92, we transferred in funds for respite care and other services from disabilities components. Under page number 94, transferred in funds from the Department of Administration and allow 4% increase over FY84 plus increased cost for utilities and risk management premiums. Page number 98, we transferred in this DRU from Homemaker Services and Adult Service Components. Page number 100, transferred in from Nursing Family Health and Community Health Grant Components. Page number 102, we transferred in from the alcoholism and drug abuse components, including new funds for the Alcohol Safety Action Program and youth drug abuse programs. Page 104, transferred in from the community mental health grants and development disabled components. Page number 106, transferred in from the Department of Environmental Conservation and Sanitation. Page number 110, under the blank Anchorage Social Services Block Grant, we transferred in from the FY84 capital budget of $2,930,000 plus 4% increase. We do have intent language as stated on page 111 for criteria and types of programs. Representative Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I'm reading over this from here. Do we have any idea, perhaps Representative Clarkson does, on how block grants were used last year's and what department benefit
public benefit, it seems to me we should have better guidelines than what we have here now.
The question is what benefit the department
receives? Yeah, well, the block grants of the $3 million in block grants, we have any idea whatsoever if we even need that amount?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the request last year was over $2.9 million appropriated in the capital budget last year. There were requests, if I recall, of over $8 million for those funds. As you know, there is a citizen advisory task force that's been created in Anchorage that has a fairly formal process and a complicated and lengthy application form requiring justification for those funds and a public hearing and review process, ultimate approval by the municipal assembly. That process has proven very successful.
I agree with you how much was requested, but the matter was how much was really needed. Even some of the ones the municipality gave to, I would very much question.
Mr. Chairman, in response to that, if this intent language is adopted, the guidelines will be stricter than they were under last year's appropriation.
That's one of them, is one of my books, which I didn't believe should have public money. Also, the 5% clause here, is that 5% per project or 5% total amount?
The effect would be the same. It's 5% of the total amount of the grant, $3.047 million. That's approximately the same share that they used for administration last year.
That's correct.
And you feel 60 days will be enough for all of them? I know they kind of dragged it out last time.
There is a bit of a problem with that because of delays in the organizations, not delays in the municipality. That is, it takes a while for some of the organizations to figure out if they need the additional money. And we're told that some of those organizations that have citizen boards of directors that don't meet in the summertime. So there may be some problems with that 60 days. Limitation, but I'm comfortable that those problems can be resolved. The point of the sentence, of course, is to try to get that money on the street as quickly as possible.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to reserve the right to perhaps on the floor, I won't hang it up anymore, that as I find out more information to address this particular block grant.
You may. Continuing on, going on to the State Health Services, page number 114. On page number, these funds have been transferred to the next five components. Starting with the first one under nursing, we increased the vacancy factor to 2%, increased travel to FY84 level, transferred funds to the Norton Sound Health Corporation, BRU. Page number 118, increased vacancy factor to 2%, deleted funds for the chlamydia screening and lab test, deleted funds for providing free vaccines to private physicians.
Mr. Chairman, you say you deleted that?
Deleted. That is correct.
What can we do about by getting you to see otherwise?
One of the things is there are areas in the state of Alaska that do have public health facilities to take care of the vaccines. We did not fund this particular component last year. And the subcommittee felt that, you know, it made a policy decision. We did not have to fund the $100,000 this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Under page number 120, we've increased the vacancy to 2%, increased the federal funds to WICI program, WIC program. Okay. Transferred funds to Norton Sound Health Corporation, BRU. Under lab services, we increased vacancy to 2% factor. Under page 124, again, the increase in vacancy to 2%. Transfers grants and contracts to community health grant component. Delete funding for the current unfilled director's position. Page number 128, infant learning program grants. We transferred the administrative costs to the administrative component. Under the program, we increased by $270,000. We transferred funds to the Norton Sound Health Corporation, BRU. We have intent language also. Under page number 130, the community health grants, we transferred the administrative cost to an administrative component. We added Norton Sound funds to EMS, health aid training, and eye care, and transferred to Norton Health Sound BRU, increased grants to Anchorage, and added an additional grant listed on page number 133. You have on page 133 the grants listed. Continuing on to page number 134 under EMS, we transferred the administrative cost to an administrative component. We increased the LU Pribilof grant by $39,300 in Bristol Bay by $1,000.
Mr. Chairman, before you go on, please.
Yes.
Under the emergency medical services in the southern region, the percentage of communities is 57%, yet the total dollars appropriated were 37% of the total. How come? Why would that be reduced so much? Every other component seemed to be increased a little except that. I have a breakdown here from...
Is the EMS Regional Council meeting presently in Juneau right now?
Yes, sir. It started this morning.
They started this morning. Aren't they the one that break out the funding grants for different areas of the state of Alaska?
Yes.
It's not done by the legislature or the health admin by the department, but by a council. Could you tell Representative Fritz where they're meeting? EMS?
No, there's conference room. Third floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Page 138. Under administration, the alcohol and drug abuse, we increased vacancy to 2%, reduced travel to FY84. Drug abuse grants, we added $692,000 for statewide programs. We put the youth drug programs and transferred youth funds to Manalik and Norton Health BIU in here. Under page 142, the alcohol abuse grants, we increased the alcohol grants to by $598,600. My reason behind this is because we passed the excise tax last year, and our estimated revenue under collecting from the liquor tax is approximately $15,500,000, and this fully, hopefully, this will take care of the alcohol program throughout the state of Alaska. We also transferred the alcohol safety action program and the transfer appropriate amount to Manalik and Norton Health Corporation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Got a second for a comment?
Yes, you.
Last year, my vote was negative on that excise tax until you said it would be actually transferred to improving the alcohol program. I'm glad to see that the year hasn't dims your memory that you've done just that. Thank you.
Yes, we cannot dedicate funds, but we try to spend the amount of money that we collect from the liquor tax, not only but on the alcohol, but the administration for but the drug abuse also, the total amount.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. API is on page number 146. We reduce funding for the new positions from 12 to 10 months and increase the vacancy to 2%. We reduced the contractual funds for the security to the actual bid amount and we deleted the equipment. Page number 148, we increase the vacancy to 2%, transfer inpatient travel from community health grant component and we reduce the grants to FY84 plus 4% increase. Going on to page number 150 under the community mental health grants,
We deleted the one-time FY84 add-on for Aleutian Pribilofs, deleted funds for the corrections inmate budgeted in the Department of Corrections, limited grant increase to FY84 plus 4%. We transferred funds to the Norton Sound Health Corporation, BRU. We added funds for the statewide suicide prevention intervention program, which includes funds for a pilot program statewide, funds for a suicide evaluation study by the Alaska Native Health Boards, increased funds for existing programs in Anchorage and Fairbanks. We increased funds for the Anchorage Community Mental Health Center, a total of $570,000. Under page number 154, Harborview Development Center, we deleted there just the new equipment and the new carpeting. Under page number 156, under the Community DD Services, we accepted the governor's amended and transfer administrative cost to administrative component. We transferred funds to Manayuk and Norton Health Sound Corporation for the DD services. Going on to page 160, the governor's Council of Handicapped, we there took the governor's amended number. Page number 164, under the Mental Health Administration, we transferred in the administrative costs from other components and transferred grants and contracts to a grants components. We increased vacancy factor to 2%. Getting on to data and word processing, starting with public assistance services. Here we're taking the governor's amended number. Public Health Services and Data Processing, the governor's amended number, page number 170. Page number 172, Mental Health Services under Data Processing, the governor's amended number. Page number 174, under Family and Youth Services, Data and Word Processing, the governor's amended number. Page number 176, under Alcohol and Drug Abuse, Data and Word Processing, the governor's amended number. Under page number 178, under DHS Administrative Services, Data and Word Processing, the governor's amended number. Here we are under page number 182, the Commissioner's Office. We transferred investigation and audit positions back to their respective components. We deleted positions funded after FY83. We increased vacancy to 2%. You may.
Mr. Chairman, will the new positions, or have you gotten to that level, be in that consideration that the governor recommended and that I'm quite concerned about, because it will involve state fraud investigation as opposed to the current work in the caseload that is confronted with federal funds. The two additional positions that we are asking for, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, largely involve with state fraud that we are not able to touch at this time. There are two positions that are very, very critical if we are to make an inroad, not only involving state fraud, Mr. Chairman, but if we are to avoid multi-million dollar sanctions associated with error rates.
Is that your comments, Commissioner?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
I would like the committee to know that the subcommittee and its chair's recommendation that we continue keeping the commissioner's office in its present level. As you know, you have the responsibility of appropriating the money. How it's spent is and the performance is supposed to be done by the administration. Last year, this particular body placed money for salary increases, not new positions, but the way they spent the money was done not with the legislature approval. It's my intention that we do not give this consideration. If this particular year that this particular department again
spends its money that's not intended, then perhaps that we need to look at Freemanizing the Department of Health and Social Services budget without hurting the services and programs for the needy and the people that benefit by this.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Please, could you explain the Freemanizing?
That where a portion of their budget would be given to them until that they prove to the legislature that they will spend the money on the programs and services that is directed by the legislature through appropriation methods.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
May I ask just a couple questions here?
You may.
On this, total number of positions are being deleted. Many positions are being transferred back to fraud and audit, et cetera. 9 positions are being eliminated, is that right? Is that correct? 11 positions?
Oh. 2 new ones, 6
the 11 positions are being deleted, 2 new ones, 6 they asked for last year.
And 2 we transferred in.
3 they transferred in. How many of those 11 positions are filled?
I believe 9.
9 of those positions are filled?
Yeah. I'm not sure about all the clerks.
Would you like the department to respond, Representative Duncan?
Yes, I guess my concern is, Mr. Chairman, that at least 3 of those positions were transferred in from data processing, as I understood here. I mean, reclassified. I just want to understand for sure what we're doing here when we do that. Maybe the department could be more specific in what's happening here. That's okay.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, we have 5 incumbents in the 11 positions, and the management analyst position are those that, in fact, Mr. Chairman, I have some paperwork here. Mr. Peter, would you kindly pass that out to the committee members so that we might be able to. They already have it? Okay.
Which one?
Well, if you might turn to the organizational chart, which is attached, I think, to that material, I think it will help you get. Out to the far right, where we have 7, the audit unit. The management analyst positions 3 and 4 with, I'm sorry.
Yes, Commissioner.
I would refer to the page where we have an itemized listing of the 11 positions that are involved. The 2 management analyst positions are vacant at this time. The 1 administrative assistant 3 position we have encumbered. The 1 administrative assistant position 1 is in the South Central Regional Center in Anchorage. there is an incumbent. The two special assistants, one for rural, the other for law, we have an incumbent in both of those positions. The one assistant commissioner for administrative support services is Assistant Commissioner Beatty, an incumbent. And as I alluded to earlier, Mr. Chairman, the two new fraud investigators for fiscal year 85 would be largely, in fact, primarily involved in state fraud. The two clerk typist position, Mr. Chairman, we have one incumbent and one vacant. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to say to the committee that over this past year, the commissioner's office has been trying very desperately to address the transition task force major irregularities and concerns that have been existing for quite some time. Without adequate staffing, at least bottom line staffing, we could very well be placed on an irreversible course of being able to maintain some of the achievements and some of the corrections that we have made. We are now trying to go to strategic planning and to place in procedure and in policy strategic matters to preclude going from band-aid to band-aid and from year to year. Mr. Chairman, to answer the question that was posed earlier, I think there are some 5 to 7 incumbents in the positions that are in question.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Could I ask the commissioner or someone to give me a brief explanation of what the two, I guess they're legislative assistant positions, the law and the rural position, what those people
yes,
do?
Yes, sir. We have two. The special assistant for law, Attorney Dan Burton, has been serving as the coordinator of legal matters in the department associated with grievance, associated with advising the commissioner.